Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
And welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm super excited about today's show. I'll have a guest calling in here shortly, and we're going to be hearing from Robert Fithian with Alaska Yaks. So excited for that phone to ring, and we'll get that conversation started. I think our guest is on the line now. Robert, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, perfect. Welcome, and good morning.
Good morning.
I can hear you loud and clear. So again, this is my guest this morning is Robert Fithian from Alaska Yaks. And Robert, tell us where you're calling from this morning, because you're not in the studio with me.
Well, Amy, I'm an Alaskan, and Alaska's pulled me all kinds of directions, my family as well. And I'm currently on Prince of Wales Island near Hollis, Alaska. And it's raining cats and dogs like it does southeast Alaska. I imagine we've had 2 to 4 inches of rain in the last 48 hours here, and it's raining hard as we speak.
Oh, my word. Wow. So, but that's not where the farm is located. Where is Alaska Yaks located?
Alaska Yaks is located in the Copper River Basin,
okay,
in the lower Copper River Basin, between what we know as Kenny Lake and Chitna, a little historic native community called Lower Tontina.
Okay, very good. And Robert, tell us a little bit about your history and connection to Alaska. How did you get here, and what got you started in agriculture?
Well, my parents and grandparents were agricultural people in Colorado along the east flanks of the Rocky Mountains, and we grew up affiliated with natural resource related industry related to the ranches and the lands there, and we saw the manifest destiny, so to speak, of increase in human populations and we are outdoors people, and I especially, of my 6 brothers and sisters, love the great outdoors, and it got to where I couldn't really enjoy what I felt was a quality wilderness experience. A lot of the country was getting covered with more human habitation, and I decided to seek different pastures, so to speak, where I could try to enjoy a quality wilderness experience. And it's kind of the same drive that people have had historically that have led people from one side of the world or the other to Alaska, and that's how I came here.
Absolutely. And how long ago was that, Robert?
That was in 1981.
Okay. And did you immediately start farming when you arrived?
No, I actually came to Alaska to get out of the mining industry. I'd sold my soul to the insides of quite a few mountains on several different continents, and thought that I was going to try to get out of that working on the insides of mountains. But I landed in Palmer and broke and went to work in the Independence mine the next day. So, so didn't quite work out as planned, but what a life we've had here. And we really got started in the agricultural end about 20 to 25 years ago when we bought the small ranch there in Lower Tontina.
Okay, very good. And so paint a picture for what the ranch looks like today.
Currently, it still kind of looks like that ranch in Lonesome Dove on television. It's pretty rough. There's a dilapidated barn, a few dilapidated buildings, a shop that we turned into our house, unique pasture, beautiful country lands. Our quality of life is exceptional, but the quality of house isn't. Our ranch lies on a plateau between the Tontina River and the Copper River, with the Chugach Mountains on one side and the Wrangell Mountains on the other side. An incredible place. And we currently have about 160 acres of pasture and a few hundred acres of hay that we put up along the Edgerton Highway there. As people travel to Chitna for dip netting, they can see the ranch pretty easy. And there's a paved highway by the ranch, and it's the only real access to Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve. So we get quite a bit of tourists there. And of course, as they're driving by the ranch, when they see yaks, they have no idea what kind of animal that is. They don't know if it's a black buffalo or some type of musk oxen. And so there was lots of people stopping to try to figure it out, and the state eventually built a pull-off there in front of the ranch to accommodate the vehicle traffic that's always stopped there. Yeah, it's a beautiful place, Amy, and our quality of life is pretty special there.
Yeah, so why yaks? When did you decide that that was the right animal to move forward with on the farm?
It was a lot of homework. The ranch, originally for us, was an escape from the Matanuska Valley, the growing populace of the Matsu Valley. And we are also professional guides, and we have a long history of working in the upper Kuskokwim region, my wife and sons and I. And quite honestly, Amy, it was wolves. We had a real surge of wolf population during the late 80s and the 1990s, and kind of wiped out our healthy wildlife populations over there, and we no longer had viability in our guiding business. We went from 12 clients a year to questionably one, and we had to do something different. So we applied for an area in the Wrangells, and a national park preserve area where they allow for hunting, and we were awarded that area, and that area took airplanes and horses to support, and there were still enough local trappers living along the McCarthy Road and in the McCarthy-Chitna region that were keeping the wolf numbers at a lower density, and subsequently we had a bit of prey population there. And so we operated in the Wrangells for a number of years utilizing horses, and the ranch became a horse ranch to support that activity, both hay and horses.
Okay.
And then my wife continued operating in the upper Kuskokwim, running our guiding program over there, using our sons as support. And she was taking one or two clients a year while I was doing the higher number of clients in the Wrangells. And we were several hundred miles apart from each other every fall. And eventually the state adopted some predator management programs over there in the upper Kuskokwim, not where we guide, but contiguous to where we guide. And over time, the population started rebuilding to the point that there came a point in time that we could start working together again. So we transferred the concession and the Wrangells to somebody else and sold the majority of the horses and started studying on what we should do with our incredible place there. And the more we studied, the more I liked the concept of looking seriously at this animal called a yak. I'd read a book years ago written by Theodore and Kermit Roosevelt, Theodore Jr., and they did an incredible trip into the high Himalayas as their great trip in their lives. And that book's name was East of the Sun, West of the Moon. And somewhere in that book, there was a chapter or two about their utilization of yak at high altitude in cold, snowy country. And that perked my memory and my interest. And the more I started studying on yaks, the more I thought, this makes some type of sense, where we were looking at, we couldn't find economic viability in beef where we live, and bison where we live, we have wild bison around us, and bison take a serious amount of fencing, and they kind of own the pasture when they live there, and elk had some inherent stress problems. We're a long ways away from a facility to harvest the animals, But the more we studied on yak, the more they seemed to fit, and especially some of their very, very, very unique characteristics that were some of the higher selling points for us. And I can get into those in a minute, but just to complete the story, after a year or two of studying, my wife and I made the decision. At first, she was very incredulous about yak. Why? I don't even know what a yak is. What are you talking about? And but the more she studied, the more she fell suit, and eventually we made an agreement that we were going to buy some yaks in Montana.
Okay.
and bring them up. And on a whim, my wife came to meet me in Fairbanks after I had a bunch of days of meetings up there one year, and traveled to Chena Hot Springs the next day. And on the way back home, we saw what we thought were a herd of yaks. And along the Chena Hot Springs Road, right near Two Rivers. And now, we had never seen a live yak. We had saved and put money in the bank to buy three yaks in Montana. And we looked at them with binoculars, and yeah, they look like yaks. So we stopped and met the lady, Jen McCartney. She was a retired beef rancher from Wyoming and had retired to Jenny M. Creek there and bought a place. And unfortunately, her husband had passed away suddenly previous to us stopping, and she was the head of nursing at a hospital in Fairbanks and retired, a workaholic-type person. Now she had a herd of yaks, and one thing led to another, and without her having any idea how much money we had in the bank, she actually sold us her whole herd of yak for the same amount of money that we had in the bank to buy just a few. And
wow.
And that's how the herd of yaks came to the Copper River Basin. We didn't just get Jenny's yaks. We got her, too. She's an incredibly special person. She's back in Wyoming now, but developed a friendship through the acquisition of the yaks that will last forever. So.
Sure. Well, I just want to interrupt you for a second, Robert, to remind folks that if you just tuned in this morning to Ag Matters Radio, I've got a guest this morning, Robert Fithian of Alaska Yaks. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and let's continue this. So how many did you originally bring out to the farm in Copper Center?
I believe that there were like 25 total. And
oh, my goodness.
With about 13,
jumped right in.
with about 13 new calves that year as well.
Wow.
So it was a pretty special deal.
That's a big difference from thinking about going outside and buying three to suddenly having a herd of 25.
Yeah. It's one of those deals. As Alaskans, we've got to be really careful about, about everything related to jumping into an ag business, but it's always wise to watch for the good deals.
Opportunity.
And at times, we get shined on by being careful and prudent and doing your homework, Amy. I really do think that doing our homework for so long really made a big difference on the yaks. So.
Sure. Yeah. So you started out with that herd, and what year was that, Robert?
That was 10 years ago.
Okay.
And so there was a little bit of publication about us getting the yaks and moving them to the Copper Basin. And, Amy, maybe before I go much further on that, I should tell you some of the characteristics that led us to believe that yak were the best thing.
Sure, yeah.
I guess first and foremost, because of their thousands of years as an animal that's thrived in the high Himalayas, generally above 12,000 feet and even up to 20,000 feet in elevation, that wind-blown winter country, the high steppes, is cold and wind-blown and oftentimes not lots of snow, somewhat comparable to a North Dakota or interior Alaska climate where there isn't a horrendous amount of snow generally, but lots of cold. The grasslands there are not a high grasslands, they're a lower grasslands. And the people that raise and maintain yak generally don't put up hay to feed them all winter. And over time, yak have ascribed basically to eating less percentage of their body weight per day than most other hoofed animals. So
okay.
A yak only eats 1% of its body weight per day, where a beef cow eats 3% as a comparison.
Right.
And an average yak cow will weigh about 600 pounds, and so subsequently that yak should eat 6 or 7 pounds of hay a day. And if we were feeding a beef cow, we'd be feeding 20, 30, or 40 pounds of hay a day. And
sure.
In Alaska, where it's costly and challenging to raise hay, that made good sense from the beginning. And then all the other attributes, the fiber from the yak is exceptional for clothing items, and it's not as fine as muskox and quiviet, but it's as fine as cashmere. And the clothing it produces is very durable, it's soft, it's luxurious, and it's very sought after. A lot of, not a lot, but there are several great fashion designers that use yak for high-end, high-quality natural fiber garments. And so there seemed to be quite a bit of demand for yak fiber. They live to be 20-plus years of age, continue to have babies until they're into their 20s, and
wow.
And they are very docile animals when they're raised in common with people.
Sure.
And they're enjoyable to raise and train. They're smart. They're intelligent. You can train them, teach them voice commands at early age that they remember for the rest of their lives. And
really?
they're quite a bit smarter than most other hoofed animals. They're highly intelligent, and
When you first read about them, they were being used as pack animals. So is that also something that you had in mind for the yak on your farm? Did you envision using them in your guiding outfit?
Amy, certainly I was considering that as one of the, there were truly 40 different reasons why we decided to go with yak. We wrote them all down.
Oh, man.
And they all turned true except for one. But of course, packing was one, and I have friends that have explored the faraway reaches of the high mountain country in Kyrgyzstan and Turkestan, and where they actually rode yaks on high elevation excursions. But it's usually the fat, unhealthy American person that rides the yaks while the Sherpa guides are leading them.
The picture of you that I pulled off of your Facebook page is you with a yak, and it appears the yak has a saddle on.
Oh, yeah. They are very adaptable to learning to pack and ride, and much, much, much more so than horses.
Really?
If we want to train a yak to pack, we'll start putting a pack on it when it's real young. And then the first time that we actually load the yak up, maybe it's a year or a year and a half old, and I can put a granddaughter or a grandson on the yak and lead it around, there's no long break-in period. At one time, I've had one yak jump up in the air when it felt the weight of the pack on its back or the saddle and run up the driveway and then come running right back to me wondering, what is this thing? And that's about the extent of the challenge of teaching yak to pack. So there is a really unique gentleman in Talkeetna that does yak trekking in the Talkeetna Mountains.
Okay.
And he has an incredibly great business. It's growing annually. And they fly clients into a lake with a float plane where the yaks and guides are waiting. And I don't know how long they spend there, but then they trek to another lake a far distance away, and the yaks carry everybody's gear, and the yaks generally arrive at those camps ahead of the clients, and they get their packs taken off, they lay down for a while, and then they go graze, and next morning they're laying back at the camp, Amy.
Wow.
And it's pretty exciting, and that second camp is at a lake as well, so then they fly the next clients into there and do the reverse, and it's growing every year, and I just think, in general, when you add all the great characteristics about yak up and look carefully at Alaska, that they're a glove-on-hand fit for Alaska.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
So one more interruption to remind folks that you're listening to Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and this morning we're talking to Robert Fithian of Alaska Yaks. And so the one attribute that we haven't really talked about yet, Robert, is the meat.
Yes, of course we'd studied all that we could study at the time. At the time we bought our yaks, there was probably less than 2,000 yak in North America.
Oh, wow.
And so they're a new phenomena as far as the commercial utilization of them. There has been a history of them in North America in the zoos, and even a history here in Alaska in the 1920s. The University of Alaska actually did some work to bring some yaks up and cross them with, I believe, Galloway cattle, and tried to raise them in Fairbanks. But for whatever reason, the experiment was not a success. And
okay.
That's one of the little historical documents on yak in North America was the Alaska experiment. And then, of course, people that have visited the Alaska Zoo have seen them. And historically, there was a rodeo yak in Alaska that somebody used in the bucking arena, and supposedly
really?
Nobody could ride him. He was called the Black Yak, and the Northern Lights Cowboy Association hosted a competitive thing at in Anchorage years ago. We went in there to watch it, and they took the one of the world champion bull riding champions and brought him to Alaska on a bet that he couldn't ride the yak for $10,000.
What?
And he ended up riding him two out of the three attempts. And so we have some of those old belt buckles, the Northern Lights Cowboy Association belt buckles that have the Black Yak on them.
Oh, wow.
So there was a little a little tidbit of history there as well. And so just the small amount of knowledge there was, but the meat characteristics always had these same factors that they claim that the maybe one of the healthiest or is one of the healthiest red meats in the world, that it's very lean, it's high in omega-3s and CLAs, and is low in the saturated fats and cholesterol and triglycerides and low in palmitic acid and all these things that make it supposedly healthier than skinless chicken and fish and all this healthy stuff and all this research, it was out there.
Okay.
And we hadn't ever tried yak. We were given some one time. It was in a sausage, and we put it in the, it was winter in Alaska, typical, and we put it in the defrosters of the cart or the truck to thaw out, and when we tried to eat it, it was hardly edible. That was our one experience. But we believed everything we read, and eventually, as soon as we got the yaks and a little bit of publicity came out, there was a gentleman who called us from Denali National Park area, David McCarthy, and he owned a chain of restaurants there in Denali. And he says, I'm a professional chef. I own several restaurants here in Denali National Park. I know all about yak meat, and I want to let you know that if you want to raise those yaks, whatever it costs you to raise them and sell me the meat, I'm willing to pay it.
And, oh, wow. Doesn't every farmer want to get that call?
Yes. And he says, no matter what it costs you to raise them and make money, you charge me what you need to charge me to stay in business. And I know one thing, that is that the consumer is willing to pay for yak meat. And
okay.
So that started it with David and 10 years ago, and he had several restaurants in Denali. Eventually, he did the 49th State Brewery at Healy. And every year, Amy, the meat demand to him doubled and or tripled, and we couldn't keep up. There was no way to maintain just the level of meat that he was going through each year. So every year, he'd have to scratch it off the menu at whatever point in time that there wasn't enough yak to...
That's a great problem to have.
Yeah, there's two inherent problems with yaks. Number one is once you go yak, there's never enough yak. And number two is once you go yak, you never go back. So,
do you have those sayings in bumper sticker form yet, Robert?
One of them we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk to me. You know, we're quickly running out of time. This half hour goes by so fast. But so quickly tell me what size, like what's the carcass weight when an animal is ready to be slaughtered, and how long does it take them to get to that size?
That's one of the challenges we ran into. We were hoping to establish a 1,000-pound male animal at 2.5 years of age. And what we're finding, Amy, is that at 2.5, all of our meat falls into the, at 2.5 years of age, all the meat falls into the delicate category that can be used for cut steaks and not just burger.
Okay.
But as soon as we push 30 months and start pushing towards 36 months, then a percentage of the animals we harvest will be too too tough, so to speak, for the restaurants to use for cut meat.
Okay.
So we stick with our 2 to 2.5 year age animal, and we try to achieve something near 1,000 pounds, but we're not achieving it. Our average weight on the 2-year-olds is a little over 600, and average weight on the 2.5-year-olds is about 750 to 800, Amy.
Okay. And Robert, what size is your herd now? How big have you gotten?
I think we have we're having 40 babies a year, and so those get separated into however many male and however many female, and they stay as independent herd. The yearlings do.
Okay.
And we have whatever percentage of them are meat animals, they end up in a separate pasture, and they just continue to live their lives there in the meat animal pasture. And we feed a lot of hay. We love to they don't eat a lot of hay, and they're really thrifty, so we actually have hay on the ground all winter long that they can lay on and preserve heat loss and body weight loss, and I want them gaining weight every day of their life. So
sure.
As soon as the weather turns a little warmer, then we quit throwing a lot of hay out there, and they eat what's on the ground. They're very thrifty that way, and as soon as it gets cold again, then we lay down plenty. So
okay.
All of the herds are that way, and they're a joy to see. They're a joy to spend time with. Our granddaughters and grandson are key in taking care of them. The granddaughter started doing tours in the yak pastures with the people that stop in at the ranch and want to do a tour. They probably started leading those tours when they were 9 or 10 years of age.
Oh, that's incredible. What a great thing for the kids to grow up with. Robert, before we do run out of time, because we're getting there, tell folks how they can learn more about your farm. Do you have a website? Are you on Facebook? Where can we learn more so that the next time we're headed down that road, we can stop in and see those yak?
Yeah, it's on the Edgerton Highway. It's easy to get to study on our yaks. Go to alaskayaks.com. And take the time to read the Alaska Yak Facts. And there's a couple different sets of directions to the ranch.
Okay.
The store at the ranch is closed for the year. We will be reopening next spring. And we sell nice garments and fiber and meat out of the store and all kinds of things made out of yak and yak books. But just follow your nose, do your homework, and don't just listen to me. There's a lot of good information out there. The one thing, Amy, I should say is what I'm finding, there were two negatives. I said one earlier, but there has actually been two the second one I didn't know about originally. But number one, the only good book about yak said that there was about 3 pounds of fiber a year could be gathered from yaks. And actually, the really nice, delicate inner wool that we like to harvest from the yak, we only end up with about 12 ounces,
oh, wow.
14 ounces of the better product. If we're taking the longer hair, we comb them, put them in the squeeze chute and comb them. And it's fun for them, fun for us. We give them their shots and trim their toes at the same time. So the fiber yield is a little smaller than what any book I ever read said. And then
okay.
I always said that yaks are high elevation animals but low elevation tolerant. And they have hemoglobin that's unlike any other animal in North America because of their needs to, they have to survive with a number of different oxygen providers to their body at high altitudes. And I believe that as science increases here in North America, that we're going to find that reproduction of yak in sea level or atmospheres that are like Pennsylvania or Georgia or very humid atmospheres do something to not allow reproduction as we would like to see them.
Oh, wow.
I've sold several small herds to people that live near sea level that are not getting reproduction.
Okay.
And we've sold small herds to people that are getting reproduction. So we don't know, and I know that the bulls that we've sold are proven bulls. They work
okay.
good for us, and they should be working good for others. But there's something in those close to sea level areas, and the one thing I've seen that lends itself to better that remedy or that situation is that the more space you have and the more the yak can actually feel like a yak, the better they do. But if they're confined into somebody's backyard and a small area where they're challenged to lead a quote, normal lifestyle, that's when it appears that we start seeing the reproduction problems. So.
Okay. Well, Robert, that was fascinating, and I would love to spend another half an hour chatting with you more. I'm sure we could cover so much more, but we are out of time. So thank you so much for being my guest this morning on Ag Matters Radio, and I can't wait to follow up on the alaskayaks.com website.
Yeah. Amy, thank you for all you do. You're a treasure to Alaska, and we appreciate your support for the ag industry.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.